Hello, and welcome to Life Care Services Health Service Division podcast series. I'm Deb Goss, Director of Clinical Consulting, and since September has been designated Sepsis Awareness Month by the Sepsis Alliance, I thought it only fitting to discuss sepsis. Now, I'm going to warn you now, there's a lot of S's in this podcast, and you might find yourself counting them or focusing on them, but here we go. Sepsis Alliance, a national advocacy organization for sepsis, reports sepsis as the third leading cause of death in the United States. As a matter of fact, it's reported every 2 minutes someone dies from sepsis in the United States, and that's more than prostate cancer, breast cancer, and AIDS combined. As sepsis can be so devastating, it certainly makes good sense to raise the level of awareness in hopes early recognition and treatment will reduce the number of sepsis cases. Sepsis is not new. However, the guidelines for recognizing and managing sepsis has changed as our knowledge regarding the pathophysiology of this diagnosis has grown. For years, SIRS, which stands for Systematic Inflammatory Response Syndrome, so SIRS criteria was used to identify individuals with sepsis. Research now reflects SIRS can occur with other non-infectious disease states and conditions such as trauma or burns or pancreatitis. So last year, a new definition of sepsis was established. The third international consensus definitions for sepsis and septic shock are: sepsis, a life-threatening organ dysfunction caused by a dysregulated host response to infection. Septic shock, a subset of sepsis in which underlying circulatory and cellular metabolism abnormalities are profound enough to substantially increase mortality. No longer is the term severe sepsis to be used. Now, is this a little bit too technical? I find CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention definition, CDC's sepsis, a little bit better understood. Sepsis is the body's extreme response or overreaction to an infection. It is life-threatening and without timely treatment can rapidly cause tissue damage, organ failure, and death. Now, unlike some medical conditions, a single clinical test specifically for the diagnosis of sepsis isn't available. The key to sepsis management lies with early detection and timely treatment. Screening tools, similar to our fall risk tool or our pressure ulcer risk tool, screening tools are necessary to help identify residents who warrant further evaluation and treatment. A systematic screening tool with education is essential to minimizing the sepsis outcomes. Misinformation regarding sepsis is predominant. It's prevalent. I think I read some poll indicating people understood sepsis to be contagious, and it isn't, by the way. But I want to add, sepsis screening, education, and management is an interdisciplinary activity as well. It requires all team members to not only be aware of sepsis signs and symptoms, but to acknowledge them and report them as well. Education should include housekeepers, certified nurse aides, therapy staff, not just nurses. The challenge to early sepsis recognition is sepsis presents itself in many different diverse ways. The symptoms can be subtle, or the symptoms can mimic other conditions, but the symptoms oftentimes will escalate quickly. So the key is early detection, and a systematic screening tool is probably one of the best tools to identify it quickly. One such tool is called the Q-SOFA. Q stands for quick. SOFA is the sequential organ failure assessment. The Q-SOFA is a modification of the SOFA used in critical care. And the QSOFA can be used in post-acute care settings to help identify a resident suspected of having sepsis. This screening tool scrutinizes three variables. 1, respiratory rate. 2, altered mentation. 3, systolic blood pressure. The medical provider should be contacted when a resident's medical condition is suggestive of a new infection and the resident is experiencing 2 of those 3 variables. Let's just go back. A resident is newly diagnosed with an infection. The respiratory rate increases to 22 breaths per minute or greater, and the resident has altered mental status. Another option might be newly diagnosed with an infection, and the systolic blood pressure is greater than 100 millimeters of mercury or less with some altered mentation. Now, another screening tool for sepsis is sometimes the use of a mnemonic sepsis, S being shivering, fever, cold, E, extreme pain, P, pale, S, sleepy or difficult to arouse, perhaps even confused, I feel like I might die, S, shortness of breath. Any of those symptoms or signs by themselves does not equal sepsis, but they should draw you to a further or higher evaluation. If the resident's medical condition is suggestive of a new infection and the resident's temperature is either too high or too low, and by that I mean greater than 101 or less than 96.8, with some tachypnea, a respiratory rate greater than 20, and altered mental status, contact the medical provider. Remember, sepsis screening is interdisciplinary. The decision to draw blood work, the white blood count, lactate levels, and blood cultures won't occur without communicating these screening concerns. And let's talk about vital signs, a word about vital signs in the post-acute care setting. Vital signs are important. Did you notice that both screening tools we talked about for sepsis utilize respiratory rates? Who typically completes respiratory evaluations in your health center? And is that part of your nursing competencies? Let's take a minute and think about the frequency of vital signs as well. Consider increasing the frequency for residents who either have a recent history of infections or who are currently being treated for an infection. With electronic medical records, it should be easier to track or to trend vitals over time. But who is monitoring those trends? Post-acute care requires the use of critical thinking skills, the ability to recognize an issue, raise a question or solution, and gather information in support or evaluate alternatives and communicate those findings with others. Survivors of sepsis often exhibit lasting long-term effects, such as physical effects like amputations or psychological effects such as cognitive changes. I'd say sepsis warrants an awareness month. And while sepsis doesn't discriminate, affecting both the young and the old, those who are well, those who are ill, the individuals who reside with us in our health centers are at greater risk of infections. Infection prevention remains one of the best ways to minimize sepsis in your community. Foster a healthy living environment, encourage good hand hygiene, good respiratory hygiene, and of course, vaccinations as we near the fall. Several sepsis screening tools resources are available. Check with Sepsis Alliance at sepsis.org or CDC for tools or assistance. And I thank you so much for joining me today, and I look forward to joining you on another podcast.
Legal disclaimer. Life Care Services, LLC is not engaged in rendering legal advice. Therefore, any information provided in this podcast, although intended to be correct, is also not intended to replace or supersede the advice of your legal counsel. Also, thank you to Ben Sounds for the music provided in this podcast.